The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. We're here to unpack the big ideas from really influential books and thinkers. And today, well, we're tackling something I think everyone feels, like that constant busyness, right? Always feeling rushed, maybe even productive, but somehow unfulfilled.
Oh, absolutely. It's like you're sprinting hard, but maybe, just maybe, in the wrong direction. We've got all these tools, apps, techniques for managing time, but are we managing purpose? That's really the core question Stephen Covey asks in First Things First.
Exactly. So our mission in this deep dive is to get right to the heart of Covey's big idea. The difference between just being efficient, that's the clock, and being effective, which is the compass. If you're listening and feel stuck just reacting all day, we think this offers a powerful way out.
Yeah, and honestly, in today's world, with notifications pinging constantly, this message feels more urgent than ever. It's about ditching what he calls the urgency addiction and finding a way to align what you do every day with what you truly value. That's the path to, well, maybe some actual peace.
Okay, so let's talk about the man himself, Stephen R. Covey. He lived from 1932 to 2012, and his ideas have shaped, I mean, really shaped, so much of modern leadership thinking.
For sure. And he wasn't just, you know, a motivational guru. He had serious credentials, an MBA from Harvard, a doctorate. He spent decades consulting with huge organizations worldwide. His work is deep. It blends leadership, philosophy, psychology.
Right. Most people probably know him best for The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I mean, that book is legendary.
It is. And First Things First. Think of it as the practical deep dive, especially into Habit 3, which is put first things first. It's the how-to.
So what makes his approach stand out? Why did it resonate so much?
I think it's because he saw the flaw in typical time management. The lists, the planners, yes, they focus on speed, on efficiency. But Covey asked, efficient at what? Are you just climbing the ladder faster? Or is the ladder against the right wall?
Good point. The compass versus the clock again.
Exactly. He centered everything on principle-centered living. True effectiveness, he argued, doesn't come from just reacting faster. It comes from understanding your core values, your purpose, and making choices based on those. It's less about hacks, more about a whole life philosophy.
Okay, so that sets up the core idea of the book perfectly. The fundamental problem isn't that we don't have enough time's fixed, right?
Right.
The real challenge is managing ourselves, our choices, our focus, what we prioritize, aligning all that with our values. It's about effectiveness first, then efficiency.
And he paints this picture of, you know, modern life where we're just addicted to urgency. The phone rings, an email lands with urgent in the subject line, a deadline looms. That's the clock dictating our lives.
Yeah, we become firefighters, constantly putting out blazes.
Exactly. And it leads to stress, burnout. Even if you look successful on the outside, you might feel hollow inside, because you're just reacting.
So the solution he proposes is this big shift, moving away from that tyranny of the urgent towards what he calls compass-based life leadership.
Mm-hmm. It means consciously designing your life, making decisions based on what's truly important, what aligns with your core principles and roles, not just what's shouting the loudest right now.
And how do we figure out what's important? What's our compass?
Well, he gives us a fantastic framework for that. The four fundamental human needs. These act like your true north. He says we all need to live our physical and financial well-being.
Okay.
To love our social connections, our relationships, to learn our mental growth and development, and finally, to leave a legacy, our sense of purpose, contribution, our spiritual side. Neglect any one of these, he says, and you'll feel out of balance.
Wow. That framework alone makes you stop and think, doesn't it? He actually kicks off the detailed part of the book with this really provocative question. Something like, how many people on their deathbed wish they had spent more time at the office?
Oof. Yeah. It's hard, right?
It immediately throws that gap into sharp relief, the difference between what we say we value and where our time actually goes.
And it forces you to look at that urgency addiction. Why are we so drawn to urgent tasks? Well, they're visible, aren't they? They demand attention. Plus, checking them off gives you that little dopamine hit, that feeling of accomplishment.
And our culture often rewards the firefighter, the crisis manager.
Totally. We celebrate the person who swoops in to save the day more than the person who did the quiet planning weeks ago to prevent the crisis from ever happening.
So without that compass, those four needs, live, love, learn, legacy guiding us, we just get pushed around by whatever feels urgent in the moment.
Precisely. You have to actively steer towards fulfilling all four. Which leads us right into maybe Covey's most famous tool, the time management matrix.
Ah, yes, the four quadrants. This is super practical.
It really is. It helps you diagnose where your time is actually going.
Yeah.
You categorize tasks based on two dimensions, urgent and important.
Okay, walk us through them. What's quadrant one?
Quadrant I is urgent and important. These are your genuine crises, your pressing problems, deadlines that really matter. It's the realm of firefighting, necessary sometimes, but stressful.
Got it. What about the opposite end?
That's quadrant four. Not urgent and not important. This is, well, basically time-wasting. Mindless scrolling, trivial stuff,
yeah.
Things that add no real value. We all drift here sometimes.
Okay, now the tricky ones. Quadrant third.
Ah, quadrant three. This is urgent but not important. This is the zone of deception, Covey calls it. Think interruptions, some meetings that aren't really relevant to your goals, other people's minor issues landing on your plate. They feel urgent because they're pressing on you, but they don't actually move your important goals forward.
Right. We spend a lot of time here thinking we're being productive.
When we're really just handling other people's priorities, or frankly, just busy work. It feels like Q1, but it's not.
Which leaves the sweet spot, quadrant two.
Exactly. Quadrant two is not urgent, but important. This is the heart of effectiveness. Think prevention, planning, relationship building, exercise, learning, strategizing, all the things that are crucial for long-term success and well-being, but don't usually shout for immediate attention.
So the big insight is truly effective people consciously spend most of their time here in quadrant two.
That's the core idea. They proactively work in QAI to prevent Q1 crises from erupting. They invest in relationships, plan ahead, take care of their health. They schedule QEI time and protect it fiercely.
This makes me think of his big rocks analogy. It's such a great visual.
Isn't it? If you have a jar and you want to fit in big rocks, pebbles, and sand, what do you put in first?
The big rocks, obviously. If you fill it with sand first, the rocks won't fit.
Exactly. And those big rocks, they are your quadrant two goals, your strategic project, that important conversation with your partner, your exercise time. If you don't consciously schedule those first, your week will just fill up with the pebbles and sand of QEI and QIV urgencies and distractions.
Okay, that makes so much sense. And this QII mindset, it extends to how you lead others too, right? With delegation.
Absolutely. Covey draws a sharp contrast. There's gopher delegation, which is basically just telling someone exactly what to do and how to do it. Micromanaging.
Yeah, we've all seen that. Or done it.
Right. It creates dependency. But then there's stewardship delegation. That's the quadrant two approach.
How does that work?
Instead of dictating the method, you focus on the desired result. You clarify expectations, provide resources, set guidelines and accountability, but then you empower the person to figure out the how.
Ah, so you're investing in their growth and capability.
Precisely. Frees them up to take ownership. And it frees you up to focus on other high-leverage QAI activities. It's a win-win.
Okay, so we understand the principles, the matrix, the delegation. How do we actually implement this week to week? Is there a system?
Yes, and this is crucial. He advocates for a weekly organizing process. It's usually about 30 minutes, maybe on a Sunday evening, to set your compass for the week ahead.
30 minutes for a whole week of focus sounds like a good investment. What are the steps?
First, you reconnect with your mission, your core values. Just remind yourself what matters most. Then, and this is key, you review your roles.
Roles, like my job title.
Not just that. All your important life roles, like, yes, manager or team member, but also parent, spouse, friend, individual for self-care growth, community member, whatever roles are central to your life.
I see. So it forces a holistic view, not just work.
Exactly. If you only think about your work role, your weekly plan will be skewed. By looking at parent, you might identify a big rock, like have a dedicated one-on-one chat with my teenager this week. Or for individual, schedule two workout sessions.
Okay, so you review roles, then what?
Then for each key role, you identify one or two big rocks for the week-specific quadrant two goals you want to accomplish for that role.
Got it. Concrete QI actions linked to each part of your life.
Right. Then you take your weekly schedule, your calendar, your planner, and you schedule those big rocks first. Treat them like important appointments you cannot miss.
Block out the time. Non-negotiable.
Exactly. After the big rocks are in, you can fill in around them with other tasks. And then, crucially, throughout the week, you need to exercise integrity in the moment of choice. When something new pops up, you pause and ask, is this aligned with my compass, my big rocks, or is it a QEI distraction?
And evaluate at the end of week how you did.
Yes. A quick evaluation helps you learn and adjust for the next week.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit. If we had to boil this down, what are the really core themes that listeners should take away from Covey's message here?
I think theme number one has to be effectiveness over efficiency. Always checking the compass before you step on the gas with the clock. Are you climbing the right ladder?
Yeah, that's fundamental. And the second theme, probably the tyranny of the urgent. Recognizing that addition we have to the immediate, the loud, the pressing.
Mm-hmm. And understanding that the truly important stuff is often quiet. It requires conscious effort, proactivity. You have to fight that urge to just react.
Good one. What else?
The third is definitely the power of quadrant two. Understanding that this isn't nice to have time. It's where real sustainable progress happens in your career, your relationships, your health. You have to make appointments with QEI.
Treat it like crucial work, not downtime.
Exactly. And the fourth theme, maybe the most practical one for getting started, is weekly planning is the optimal cadence. A day is too short, you get swamped. A month is too long, you lose focus. The week seems to be that sweet spot for balancing all your roles and fitting in those big rocks.
That makes sense. You know, one thing about Covey is he had a real knack for summing up these big ideas in really memorable phrases.
Oh, absolutely. Little mantras you can actually use.
Like the first one. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing.
So simple, but so powerful, right? It's that constant reminder amidst all the noise to check back with your purpose. What is the main thing for you right now in this role this week?
Yeah, cuts through the clutter. Okay, another big one. The key is not to prioritize what's on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities.
Boom. That's the essence of QI living, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't find time for important things. You make time by putting those big rocks on the schedule first. Everything else fits around them. That's the proactive shift.
Love that. And how about this one, which speaks to the discipline needed? You have to decide what your highest priorities are and have the courage to say no by having a bigger yes burning inside.
Mm. That reframes saying no completely. It's not negative. Saying no to a distraction, to a QI task that doesn't align. It's actually saying a powerful yes to your own core values, your big rocks, your purpose. It gives you permission, almost removes the guilt.
Okay, this is all great in theory, but how do people listening right now actually start doing this? What's the first step?
The absolute first, most practical step. Schedule that 30-minute weekly review right now. Put it in your calendar as a recurring appointment. If it's not scheduled, believe me, it won't happen consistently.
Good advice. Make it real.
And when you do that review, really use those roles. Think about spouse or partner. What's a QII big rock? Maybe plan a date night. For individual, maybe it's read for 30 minutes 3 times this week. Be specific.
And you can use this framework for relationships too, right? That's classic QII.
Totally. Investing in relationships, building that emotional bank account, as Covey calls it, in 7 Habits, that requires proactive, scheduled time. It doesn't just happen by accident amidst the busyness. You have to treat quality time like a critical meeting.
It also sounds like a great filter for making decisions on the fly when a new request comes in.
Exactly. Run it through the filter. Is this urgent? Is it important? Does it align with my roles, my big rocks for this week? If it's urgent but not important, QII, can you delegate it? Can you politely decline? It gives you a clear, principle-based way to manage incoming demands without just reacting.
So wrapping up, what's the one final thought or takeaway that really sticks with you from revisiting First Things First?
For me, it's the realization that the answer to feeling overwhelmed isn't just finding clever ways to do more faster. It's actually about integrity.
Integrity? How so?
Integrity with yourself.
Yeah.
Aligning your actions with your deepest values, moving from that chronic, low-grade stress of feeling like you're always behind to this quiet confidence, this sort of inner peace that comes from knowing you're focused on the right things, the important things.
That's powerful. For me, I think the lasting impact is how it elevates the whole conversation beyond just productivity tips. It's about using our uniquely human gift, our independent will, our ability to choose our response based on principles, not just react to circumstances.
Yeah.
When you truly live by that compass, you're not just managing tasks, you're genuinely leading your own life. It feels much more empowering.
Couldn't agree more. It's a profound shift in perspective.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.